sound. Logic podcast. Two guys with no credentials. Reviewing Rolling Stone 500. Greatest album.
Why don't you start us off?
Yeah, no, I will. Sorry, I was looking at something. I couldn't. Well, because in the last episode, you introduced it as John Lennon Plastic Ono Band by the Plastic Ono Band. And I was just checking that because I think that's the name of the album. And officially, it's by John Lennon. I just wanted to
check.
I just wanted to check that and make sure I wasn't misspeaking.
Okay.
We're rolling? We're rolling.
Yep.
Oh, we've been rolling for over a minute. Okay, welcome back, everyone, and thanks for joining us again here at the Sound Logic Podcast. Today, we're discussing album number 85 on Rolling Stone Magazine's Top 500 Album List. This is John Lennon Plastic Ono Band, the first solo album by John Lennon.
Yeah, last summer when we were up in Ontario visiting, we got in the car and went out to Newmarket to visit 33 and a Third Record Store. They had one of their sweet deals going on. I forget what it was, like 5 albums for $25 or something like that from a certain bin. And I picked up John Lennon's Imagine, partially because I remember enjoying Plastic Ono Band.
Right.
And yeah. I don't like Imagine as much as I like Plastic Ono Band. Maybe it'll grow on me, but I was re-listening to Plastic Ono Band tonight and thinking like, oh, this is what I was hoping for when I pulled that copy of Imagine off the shelf. Anyway, that's what a record collection's all about. Figuring out new stuff and see what you like, see what you don't like. All that to say, I guess I kind of like Plastic Ono Band.
It's good. No, yeah. It's and it's so... Well, first of all, I guess I don't know if you said this. This is a revisit. Yeah. We reviewed this previously. It was like number 21, I think, on the...
Yeah,
on
23. 23 on the 2012 list. So it's taken a bit of a hit here now, 85.
Yeah. A few different comments there. First of all, when we did that, I felt it was a little high, even when we listened to it. I know it's John Lennon. I know it was right on the heels of the end of the Beatles, so they were still very much in the forefront of pop culture and music. And that's a big deal. But as music, I thought it was okay. I didn't really understand the justification, other than everybody's obsession with John Lennon, that it was the 23rd best album of all time. So I still kind of stick by that. I don't mind it here at 85. The second thing is... I just got George Harrison's debut solo album, All Things Much Past, which is a triple disc set. And it came out, I believe, the same year. And it's interesting to hear what directions each of the artists went. John Lennon went in a... Please go and listen to this. Give this album a listen if you haven't. He went in a bit of a darker direction. And not entirely melancholy, but more introspective. He was finding some peace as well, which was something he needed. And then the last tidbit, which I always found really interesting. I'm just doing some verbal diarrhea here, Ben, just getting everything out before I forget it all. We'll talk about this when we listen to it, but I do find it fascinating that this is John Lennon Plastic Ono Band, and on the same day, Yoko Ono released Yoko Ono Plastic Ono Band.
Yeah.
And the I always found interesting the cover art. So on this one, it's on John Lennon's album, it's Yoko sitting against a big tree in the woods with John sitting in front of her, resting his head on her lap. And then on her cover, it's the opposite, where she's sitting in front of him. So I did like that. That album is very unique. If you do have a minute to listen to Yoko Ono, Plastic Ono Band.
Challenging would be a good word.
I was trying to be as diplomatic and generous as possible. Challenging is another good one. Very unique. Yeah. It was John Lennon appears on it a lot, and the other artists who were on his album. But on this album, you don't really get a Yoko Ono appearance.
he
drew the line somewhere. Anyways, it's been cool to, and I'll give you a chance to talk in case people were wondering if I was ever going to do that.
You're doing a great job.
Well, thanks. Yeah. I appreciate that. it was fun to revisit this because it is a special album. It's a unique album, I think there's something. Debut albums to me are special because it's the beginning of somebody's career. Now this is the beginning of John Lennon's career, but certainly the beginning of his solo career. So, which he did go on to do other amazing things too. So, this is a neat one. What are your thoughts on kind of coming back to it?
I don't have much to add. I think the track list almost implies there's going to be more intensity here, like Isolation, My Mummy's Dead. you know, there's some like intense themes here, but the album, it is melancholy at times, but there's some really lovely stuff here too. I really like Remember. Mm-hmm. Kind of ends with a weird record scratch and crash sound, but I just looked back. We released our review September of 2019. So, boy, it's been a while. And I'm looking forward to what we had to say about this, which is good because that's what we'll be playing for you next.
I do remember looking at the track list here again. I do remember, you know, Working Class Hero is a fairly poignant song.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just a brilliant piece.
Some Wrestling with God on the God track. Yeah, some interesting stuff.
It's a very personal album, and I like that. Phil Spector helping to produce and playing some piano. Yoko Ono, as I mentioned, credited for, in quotations, wind. I don't think we ever did figure out what wind is. If she was wandering through the studio generating some wind.
Yeah. Or,
if she did sing, I don't.
His ear while he was.
Yeah, maybe. Mal Evans, Tea and Sympathy, which I think he was credited for that on some Beatles albums and certainly on the George Harrison solo album I mentioned, All Things Will Pass. He's credited as Tea and Sympathy. I think he also played the anvil on Maxwell Silver Hammer on Abbey Road. And if you've watched the film Get Back, of a documentary on the Beatles that's on Disney Plus. Mal Evans, he's one of the sound techs, and he's in it a lot.
Okay.
So see, and Ringo Starr playing drums on this a lot. Billy Preston again. So you see them moving in still a lot of the same circles with the same, you know, the same technicians, the same engineers, a lot of the same artists. You know, Ringo, I'm not sure about McCartney, but he was certainly on John and George's album, so they obviously still had a connection. Drummers can do that, eh? Like, they're just usually in the background. They don't get involved in the drama.
As long as you lay down the beat.
Just lay down a solid beat. And Ringo could do that, so.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's it from us. A little preamble here. We hope you enjoy it. Our previous review of this. After you listen to this next review, coming up next, we have number 86, which is another one that we've done before. This is the self-titled debut album from The Doors. Mm-hmm. So I'll be joining us again for The Doors. Too. Yeah, and stick around for John Lennon Plastic Ono Band coming up right after this.
I'm Ben, and you're listening to the Sound Logic Podcast.
This is Mike. Each episode, we discuss one of music's greatest albums from Rolling Stone magazine's top 500 list.
Brought to you by two guys with no credentials. Welcome back, everyone. You found the Sound Logic Podcast. We're glad you're with us here today. Today, we are discussing album number 23 on Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Albums of All Time. That happens to be John Lennon, Plastic Ono Band, by John Lennon.
Yeah, a bit of a redundant title, I guess.
Yeah, I guess I didn't say the Slash. There's a Slash in there too. John Lennon Slash Plastic Ono Band in the title. I don't know, for artistic purposes.
I don't think you have to. I don't think you have to say it.
Yeah, well, we can't even ask him anymore if it's important or crucial.
No, we could ask Yoko.
We could. That's true. Send her a tweet.
She was there.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. Ben, have you listened to this album at all before we started doing this thing?
No, this was a new one for me. I think probably when I really got into the Beatles, I probably had a notion that I should really tackle some solo stuff. I think Paul McCartney was the only person I ever pursued that with. I'm not sure why. I think I don't know, maybe John's songs never seemed to appeal to me as much as Paul's did, and so that was the path that I chose first. But how about you? Was this a new one for you?
Yeah, brand new. I have never explored John's solo stuff. You know, I knew some of the big hits like Imagine.
Yeah.
And, you know, a couple other songs I had heard. But never really, and same thing, never had a desire to search out his solo stuff. Paul McCartney's solo career just seemed to kind of be in the spotlight a little more.
Yeah.
I think more singles, catchier singles.
Yep.
And of course, his stuff with Wings, you know, tons of music there.
Yeah.
Maybe we can say he was more successful as a solo artist. And I mean, that's one, subjective, and two, perhaps not fair, because he was able to continue to produce music after 1980, whereas John wasn't.
Yep.
So I don't know what to say, but for whatever reason, no, I hadn't listened to this before. Really wasn't familiar with any of it.
Yeah.
What did you expect before you listened to it? Did you have any preconceived notions about it?
Yeah, I think I was assuming it would sort of continue on the path that he seemed to be on at the end of the Beatles era. So when I think about his music from that time, I think about it, whether this is fair or not, as being a little darker, a little bit more random, a little bit more shouty for some reason, and a
right.
little bit
yep.
weirder, you know, with drug influence, with Yoko's influence, just like
right.
doing things for the sake yes. of trying and not necessarily because they actually sound really good. And so I didn't know at all what to expect here. How about you?
I was thinking towards the negative in terms of what I thought it would be, but what I did know historically, and similar to you, was kind of the breakdown of
yeah.
the Beatles group with John's issues with substance abuse. And already knowing, although not knowing her music, but knowing Yoko Ono's music to be a little out there and a little avant-garde, I knew that, and knowing that she was a major influence with him, I thought it would be a bit of a flop, at least in yeah. terms of my listening experience.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting place to start from. I guess the other piece that I'll add here is that I do put some stock still, even though I'm still not quite clear how this list was exactly assembled. The fact that it is so high made me think, oh, maybe there's going to be something good here. 23rd best album of all time. Like,
yeah.
With a few exceptions, I think we've felt
yeah.
fairly pleased by the music that we've tackled so far that we haven't ever heard before. And so I was cautiously optimistic, I guess, too.
I think that's fair. And there's at least some curiosity.
Yeah.
Like when we, I think whenever we kind of start to have this conversation, the album that I go back to in my mind is always Velvet Underground and Nico.
Yeah.
Because that was the thing where it's like, well, there's got to be a reason it's here. And even after listening to it or partially listening to it, going, okay, but there's got to be, like, there's got to be a big reason why it's here.
Yeah.
And something like this that I really wasn't familiar with, like, well, to be 23rd greatest, there's got to be, it could be awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's that anticipation and also, and we've talked about this before, kind of the excitement of listening to something that's totally new. And for, again, not to sound, I certainly haven't listened to all the music or even have scratched the surface on all the music, but I've listened to a lot of music to find something new within this rock genre, or what they say, I think we can say that this list is rock centric, is focused kind of around rock and the things that touch rock and have created it. It's exciting to come across this new music.
Absolutely. Or new to us.
I've moved something up in our schedule here, in our kind of rubric, if you will, because just kind of the flow of the way our conversations go. So I want to ask at this point, do you have any personal memories tied to the album or any of the songs? And I know that you said you had listened to it before, but did anything kind of trigger as you listened to it?
No, I don't think so. Aside from some similar sounding artists, which grew out of a text message that you sent me about one specific song, but we'll get to that later when we go over the music in particular. So there were some familiar sounds, but not because I had heard the music before.
I didn't have any memories, but when I heard Working Class Hero, which is one of the tracks, I knew I had heard it.
Really?
And again, I'll come back to that later. I knew I heard, and I said, I know I've heard this, but for some reason I felt like I hadn't heard his version. And I, as we'll discuss later, that I found that to be true, but that was the only thing. Other than that, there was nothing. There was nothing that was familiar. Or nothing, no memories to it. So again, brand new. So, and again, fun to do something totally new. And I guess the last couple albums we've done, Robert Johnson, all very new to me. And even Chuck Berry, I knew some of the hits, but all very new. So I guess in these next few albums that we're doing, it's a lot of it's new.
Yeah. I think that is exciting. And, I think I guess I'm assuming that these next few albums are not just here for their historic significance. Like, they're too recent for that to be their primary purpose, I guess.
Yeah. And
for sure. It'll be fun to tackle these next couple.
Well, let's get into some details, shall we?
I love it.
Details, 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 details. Okay, so this album was released on December 11th, 1970. And if I'm remembering correctly, that's the same year that the Beatles' last album was released, which was Let It Be. Pretty sure that was in 1970. So this is right on the heels of the Beatles' career, same year. Everything's written by John Lennon. It charted number 8 in the UK and number 6 in the US. So again, the Beatles are very popular in the US. For sales, I found that it was certified gold in the U.S., so that's 500,000. Okay. So not nearly as successful as most of the Beatles albums. Got a few notes here. So this album was released. This was John Lennon's first solo album. However, he had done some experimental albums or recordings, maybe not albums, with the Plastic Ono Band, which was him and Yoko Ono and a few other people. And this was released on the same day as Yoko Ono's debut avant-garde album, which was called the same thing. Hers was called Plastic Ono Band. Did you take an opportunity to listen to that?
No, I haven't. I got your word of warning that it was quite out there, and I didn't pursue it. I should have, but
I would recommend at least perusing the first few minutes of each track. It's you know what? Some of the music, because it's John Lennon, it's Ringo Starr. He plays the drums, just as he does on this album. And some of the music's actually quite good, but the vocal stylings are, Yoko Ono, she doesn't, and I haven't listened to every single track yet, and I'd like to, but she doesn't really sing. Like, she doesn't sing words. She kind of screams or yells one word, which, and again, this is not me knocking it or saying that it's bad. I'm just trying to say what it is, and it's Yoko Ono kind of yelling, and there's a lot of points where she's got different effects on her voice, or a lot of like delays and relays. So it's certainly interesting, but I could see that it might not have been very successful in the mainstream. So
have you figured out why exactly we've got multiple collaborative albums using Plastic Ono Band, and now here we have two albums that are considered to be solo projects, but also using that Plastic Ono Band moniker and including the same people who were a part of the collaborative Plastic Ono Band. It's a little bit weird to me that we call these two albums solo projects when it's clearly more than the individual. And it's the same individuals who have been working together on these other side projects for, the decade before. I don't know if it's a sales move or if there really was a point where, like, you know, they went off by themselves and said, look, this is not collaborative anymore. I'm going to write stuff here. You write stuff there. We'll keep using the Plastic Ono Band moniker.
Have you ever had an experience with not just your spouse now, but with any partner or even a friend where you really, really, you really respect them, care for them, love them, and they say, hey, do you want to do this thing with me? You know, whatever it may be, you know, make a cake or make a song or make some art. And you go, yeah, sure, we can do that. I kind of get the sense with these two albums, because John played on Yoko Ono's album, he played guitar and Ringo drummed and a lot of the same artists. And on John's album, she's not there. She has a credit for, in quotations, wind. and I don't know what wind is, but you never hear her voice and she's not credited on playing any instrument. So I don't know what wind is, whether that's some sort of spiritual or emotional support. So it's like, John, will you play on my album? Well, of course I will, you know? And it's like, can I play on your album? Yeah, we'll find a spot for you. You know, like and I don't know how it went down, and this is not historical, but I almost get that sense that her name is there and her picture's on the cover, but she's not in it.
Right.
She didn't actually contribute to the music. I'm not saying she didn't contribute in any way, because I don't know that. I can't say that, but it's kind of like, you know, oh yeah, we could do it together. Yeah sure. You know, anyways, that's me kind of making that up, but I digress.
Well, I think you're onto something though, because I think with more Yoko present here, I think it probably would end up being like way more avant-garde, like her album is, if I'm understanding you correctly.
Yes.
Whereas this album,
yes,
it still has that same, it's not the same sound, but it sounds like a logical next stepping point if the band had stayed together, perhaps.
There's definitely a difference. You're not wrong there. But I think, you know, you don't have those other three guys and you really feel his flavor on this. And I want to, I think we should move on because that really leads into the next. Yeah. So for some of the other artists, so the names that would be recognizable, Ringo Starr plays, not every song has drums, but every song that does have drums features Ringo Starr on drums. And also Phil Spector plays piano for a track called Love, which is interesting. There's a lot of really interesting pieces written. There was one quotation, which I think really sums up this album musically and definitely lyrically. This is from a website called Beatles Bible, and I don't know how credible they are, but it seemed to have a lot of stuff. So it said, John Lennon's first solo album remains one of the most remarkable musical statements ever released by a major artist. With confrontation of various demons, a demolition of the Beatles legend, and at times a painfully honest account of a troubled man struggling to deal with a reality he couldn't change. The album saw Lennon stripping away layers of defense and artifice, leaving his most raw, direct, and heartfelt collection of songs. And I think when you read through the lyrics and listen to them, a lot of them are very personal, and some of them very dark, but very honest. And especially in the wake of a lot of very happy poppy songs, certainly from the earlier career of the Beatles, but also some of it later, or some of the more playful songs. This is a much different feel, dealing with a lot of domestic issues and issues that stem to his childhood, feeling abandoned by his parents, his mother who died when he was very young, and his father who left. So it's very personal, very raw. And I think that's why, I think that's one of the reasons, as we get a little further, I think that's one of the reasons that they put this so high. Not only is the music good, but lyrically, you see a very different side of the John Lennon that you knew from the Beatles.
Yeah. Well, and I think if I'm remembering correctly, was it the White Album that fans kind of criticized for being right there in the late 60s and not being terribly politically pointed? This album, okay, on the other hand, has some like very specific cultural critiques.
Absolutely.
You know, where it's like, okay, you thought we were just making fun music you could scream along to? Like, let me tell you how life really works. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there's a depth to it that I don't think you see all that often in the Beatles catalog.
I agree. It really does dig deep. And I think some of the songs are difficult to really listen to, both musically and lyrically. Mm-hmm. Some of them are challenging. Rolling Stone, you know, if you go to the Rolling Stone Top 500 album website, because they have a whole section for it, there's a little blurb on each album, and here's a little excerpt from that. It says, this album is also known as the Primal Scream album, referring to the painful therapy that gave rise to its songs. It is the sound of year zero. I'm assuming year zero means, you know, the first year after the Beatles, what that sounds like. Primal Scream, right. Are you familiar with this? Did you read up on this at all?
Just a little bit.
Yeah, so after the Beatles, or as they ended, and John Lennon and Yoko Ono kind of retreated to his private estate and had, you know, a ton of people there all the time. And he was really spiraling mentally. Mm-hmm. And he read a book by a psychologist or psychotherapist in the US. And one of the theories was this primal scream. And he liked it so much, or was so intrigued by it, he read the book in a day and then called this doctor and got him to come over. And the idea was that they kind of berate you so much and force you to break down and go back into your past that you just end up just screaming.
Yeah.
Just kind of they break you down. And then once you've broken down, then they dig in, and can really dig deep into those issues. And so he flew this doctor over to their place, but because there were people there all the time, it just didn't work. So he got them to come back to New York and started doing this therapy and really stripped everything away. And I think that he's quoted as saying that gave inspiration to kind of put all that very personal stuff in this album.
Sure.
Did you have any other historical notes before we get kind of into the artwork here?
I thought it'd be interesting to point out that Rolling Stone, at the end of the 80s, considered it the fourth best album of the past 20 years. So in 1987, wow, they came out with a top 100 albums of the last 20 years, and it was number four.
Okay.
So
interesting.
It was highly touted.
Wow, think about all the albums.
And basically in the 70s and 80s, and I guess a little bit of the late 60s too. It was given the
number four
ranking by Rolling Stone. So.
And think, you know, so at least with that group of people and possibly more, it really resonated.
Yeah.
Right? It really resonated. There's something in there. And I think because it's so personal, and also a lot of it's very relatable.
Yeah.
And I think that if you're in the right state of mind, it can help you kind of face some of those demons or some of those issues.
Well, and I wonder too, if you grew up with the Beatles as your sort of candy pop, you know, good time music, and then you start to get jaded a little later in life, to have an album like this to that's still tied to those childhood memories, I think would be pretty powerful.
Yeah. Very much more mature. Yeah. I totally agree. You can read different books, and there's one about Laurel Canyon, but there's a major shift in music and in culture once you hit the 70s. Mm-hmm. I've probably talked about this before, but one of the big reasons is drug use. And by the late 60s, 68, 69, 70, everybody is switching from, you know, hallucinogens, acid, marijuana, LSD, and they're switching over to the really hard uppers, heroin, cocaine, right, and of the like. And so that is majorly affecting the creative process, physical and mental health, and the whole culture. You see a big shift in the type of music. It's much darker in the 70s, and a lot, and the music is harder in general if you listen to a lot of the rock. And I think tied into that, but you have the deaths of some very significant people at the end of the 60s, you know, Jimi Hendrix, Jim Morrison, even Mama Cass, although it's slightly different culture, but it was all kind of the same group of people, and everything is shifting. And I think John Lennon is right at the forefront of it. You know, he switches right away. He's almost like a couple years ahead of the curve here in terms of what's happening in the whole tone of the musical culture. So it's really, really interesting. And I think, again, that adds on to why this album has been placed so yeah, significant. Okay, so album cover. So this is another one of the album, we've seen a few of these album covers that has no writing on it.
Yeah.
Like in every, I've tried to make sure that I wasn't just grabbing a picture, but any, like it doesn't say anything anywhere.
Right. And it's the same image as Yoko's Plastic Ono Band. It comes out the same time, right?
If you,
it's just a slightly different color tint.
If, unless I'm mistaken, in this one, John Lennon is lying down kind of with his knees up a bit on his back, and he's kind of resting on Yoko Ono, who's sitting with her back to the tree. And on Yoko Ono's, it's the same shot. The lighting is just a little bit different, but the people have switched spots.
I didn't even catch that.
He's sitting against the tree, and she's sitting in front of him, leaning against him. So I find that very interesting. I find it symbolic, whether it's intentional or not, that in this album, he is resting against her. He doesn't have the dominant position being behind her, around her.
Even though he didn't want her to help bake the cake.
He is resting. Hey, I want to go on the record saying that's a Mike Jones interpretation, okay? That's not, you can't, I don't want anybody, you know, kind of saying that that's actually happened. Jeez. But, you know, and he was very, they were always very public with their affection and with how they felt about each other and their relationship. It was a very public relationship. And I think this is a beautiful expression. And I think it shows also kind of what he's kind of dealing with and going through, that he's kind of releasing some of this, some of his past, and letting someone else help him. So, yeah, it's very, the wash on it kind of just screams 70s to me, late 60s, early 70s. Just the filtering of the light, you know, it's greeny, yellowy, and it looks like an old picture that your parents would have in an old album. I almost want the edges to be rounded, you know, like those old photos, right, with the rounded edges. Because this is, I mean, this is over a decade before you and I were born, so we don't have any pictures in our life when we were alive that have this quality. So there's this kind of older quality of just a regular old photograph. They're leaning against this large tree. You know, they could be in a little meadow or by a creek. It's a nice image, but that's it. just a picture. And they're very small in it, right? They're at the bottom of the picture, you know, they take up like the halfway mark of the picture. They're mm-hmm. way below it. So they don't even take up much of the picture. It's mostly just the tree and the foliage, you know, so very interesting. Should I list all the tracks? I think I should. Parts. I feel like I should. I usually cop out if it's a big list, but this is, I think because this is a significant, well, they're all significant yeah. albums, but I think a lot of these songs really speak. Okay, so we'll go through 11 tracks. So we've got Mother. Hold On. I Found Out. Working Class Hero. Isolation. Then I think we go to side two with Remember. Love. Well, well, well. Look at me. God. And My Mummy's Dead. End on a happy note.
Yeah, I was gonna say, and like Robert Johnson, you can tell a lot by the names that he chooses to give these songs. You know, you almost instantly yeah. get a sense of what this album is going to be talking about. Some heavy heartbreak, mm-hmm. deeper stuff here.
Well, and the book ends with the first track is Mother, and the last track is My Mummy's Dead. So it's there's, you know, I think, and he was open about it too, really dealing with, you know, feeling abandoned by his mother and then her dying when I think it was like in 59 mm-hmm. or 60, like he was very young. So really dealing with that, the impact that had on his life. And it's like for the decade that he was in the Beatles, and maybe for all of them, but certainly for John, I feel like what he's saying with the album is that he didn't really have a chance to deal with anything personal during that time. That like all this stuff is just building up and now it's all this baggage you got to unpack.
Yeah.
I kind of get that sense. I made a few notes on just some of the tracks that I liked. Did you want to go first, or?
Why don't we start with the one that we were texting about? We're getting into songs that stand out, I think.
Sure.
It was somewhere during the summer where you had sent me a message saying, hey, have you checked out Plastic Ono Band yet? And I had maybe given it a single, very quick run through. And you're like, go check out track number 6, Remember. Tell me what you think it sounds like. And immediately I was like, oh, man, this sounds so familiar. And I think 3 bands actually came to my mind. I thought it had a little bit of a Ben Folds kind of piano-driven element. I thought it sounded a lot like some of the more piano-focused stuff from Electric Light Orchestra, who I guess is a band that tried to mimic the Beatles sound, so that's not too surprising. And then a good old Canadian band that we listened to a lot in high school called Sloan, which... I think was the one that you had in your mind. Is that right?
Well, it was Ben Folds. Really, some of the timing signatures. He plays around with some of the timing within the within the verses. Really made me feel and very piano driven on that. So it made me think of Ben Folds. And I hadn't thought of ELO. I'm not as familiar with ELO. I don't think I'm quite as big a fan as you are, although they're very good. Mm-hmm. But when you mentioned Sloan, like, some of their more piano-y stuff, although they have a lot of guitar-driven songs, but really it's Ben Folds that jumped out.
And all three of those groups do play with timing and time signature and sometimes have their drums sort of on off beats that you aren't anticipating or expecting. It doesn't make me think Ringo Starr when I listen to those drums on that song.
No,
like I don't know. It's fairly simple, but I don't know. Just with the timing of the piano, I love what they've done with that, and that's easily the track that stands out for me and the one I keep going back to, perhaps because of its familiarity. But quick glance as you went through that track list just now, that's the one where I was like, oh, I want to put that one back on.
It's probably my favorite, and I think it's the one I enjoy the most, and I find it it's fun to listen to, but also it's stimulating too, because musically it's a little more complicated, and I like that. It's some of the tracks are hard to listen to lyrically. They're depressing. They're challenging and they're negative. And I'm not saying that's bad or wrong. We need to have those songs, but I don't always want to listen to that. But Remember is a little happier, a little peppier. Remember jumps out right away. I think it's probably my favorite track or one of them. I do like Mother. I like the way it starts with kind of the, it's the album is dark, and the album starts with this ominous tolling of a bell before, for quite some time. They really let it ring out before. It's probably, 20 or 30 seconds before, and he starts, like, his lyric starts the song. Mother, right in. There's no intro. It's like kind of just. I was surprised the first time I heard it. Oh, here we go. Song is starting. Mother, you had me, but I never had you. I mean, that's pretty dark. That's tough.
It's long, but it's not a boring song either. I mean, I think because there's so much emotion poured into it, I'm usually quick to knock songs that are more than 5 minutes long, but I didn't find myself thinking like, oh, just get to the end. I don't know, there's something about it that I found quite compelling.
I was listening while I was making notes for this. I was listening to the album, and I always forget about it, but then partway through the second track, Hold On, there's a man's voice whispers, kind of says the words in a deep voice, says cookie in the middle of the song, and I can't figure out why. It's like it jumps out at me every time, and it's so weird, and it doesn't, like, to me it doesn't fit with, it kind of makes me giggle because it's just kind of weird. It's kind of like this guy creeping in the back. The track Love is the one that Phil Spector plays on, and I love the piano in that song. It is really beautiful piano part, and that one really jumps out to me.
It's beautiful.
The song God, where he just kind of goes, it's like a list, right? I don't believe in God. I don't believe. He just goes through all these things. I don't believe in Beatles. It's like, it's a statement, but it's just this verse that goes on and on and on. Very repetitive. It's like a laundry list. And it's very, it's poignant and almost, it feels uncomfortable. Like, I feel uncomfortable listening to it.
Yeah,
because it's so personal and direct, and I do like it, but it's tough.
It almost makes me feel like some sort of response to Imagine. Like it's trying to pull back the curtain on reality rather than saying like, hey, there's something beautiful out there. It's like a bizarro version or something, right, of Imagine.
Really interesting. I guess Imagine what might have been the response to this.
Yeah. The other one that really pulls me in every time is Isolation. I think similar to Love, it's got a beautiful kind of piano refrain throughout it, but it's also kind of melancholy in a way that I really like in it. And the song has a big crescendo and builds to a more intense point partway through too.
Yeah, it kind of plays with the sharps and flats there and almost has a bit of a Beatles feel.
Yeah. But a bit of a Paul feel, kind of.
For sure. And you know, you got to expect there's going to be some of that when you've been making music with the same people for a decade.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard to shake that, especially when he was a, you know, one of the driving forces of it. Mm-hmm. But if you played me a bunch of Beatles tracks and mixed in some of the, like, if I didn't know that these tracks were from a John Lennon solo album and you mix some in, I think that I would say, well, that one's a little different, you know, like same voice, similar instrumentation.
Yeah.
You know, it's not similar, same genre of music. It's not like it's, you know, we've put on the Yoko Ono track and it's like, holy moly, what's this? You know, but I think I would say like, oh, this is different.
Yeah.
For most of them, not all of them, but some of them are similar.
Yeah. Even though it's so close to their Beatles career, there's a 70s vibe, I think, that comes out of some of these tracks too. I found out makes me feel a lot like a T-Rex album, a band that we'll get to.
Okay,
in a
yeah.
bunch of albums. like just a bit grittier around the edges. Oh, you don't like T-Rex? Oh, that'll be a fun one to do then.
You know what? I say that. I probably don't know anything other than Bang It On, Get It On. And I feel like we heard that so many times growing up. It was just like, oh my God, really? So I'm very ignorant when it comes to that band. Yeah. I'll look forward to it.
But yeah, it's such an interesting album. I think my first time through, I thought, meh, there's not a whole lot here. But every time I've listened to it since, I have found it more enjoyable and more maybe nuanced or rich in terms of the stuff that's there to digest.
Yes.
I feel like each listen kind of builds on the one before, which is not something I was expecting.
I just read in our notes additional, before you started speaking, it says additional comments. And I hadn't written anything, but I was going to say almost the same thing. that the first time through, I was like, it's okay. And then thought, I should give it another go just for the sake of being studious. Yep. And every time I've listened to it, I'm finding new things and I'm enjoying more things or I'm hearing a track and going, oh, I didn't really noticed that track before, but this time I really like it. You know, like, so it's an album that's got a bit of a slow burn.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a little while, but there are some gems there. And as a whole, it is a very special album, and there's something very interesting about, I mean, any artist who breaks away from a very successful band, and that's an understatement when it comes to the Beatles. I find it always very interesting. What are they going to do on their solo attempt?
Mm-hmm.
Some have set out and absolutely flopped. Here, think about, you know, like Freddie Mercury, whose solo career was not successful, even though he was amazing.
Yeah.
As a solo artist, it kind of flopped.
Yeah.
And there's been others, and then some who have done amazing things, you know, John Lennon, Paul McCartney, guys like Peter Gabriel, and many others, Phil Collins, many others who have done well. And so I find it very interesting what happens. But this is a special album. I liked it.
There's another piece here that I think it's a good time for this segue. So I do need to give a shout out to my friend Thomas. He recently commented on Facebook about discovering how great Marvin Gaye's What's Going On album is. And I put like a very quick comment saying, yeah, we had a similar experience when we went through it on the SoundLogic podcast. And he said, what's that? And, you know, and I was down the rabbit hole that we began. And he really seems to be appreciating SoundLogic podcast. And several days ago, he put up a post really appreciating the journey that we're on, and he's really enjoying all that we've doing. He he said something like, recommended for fans of overthinking how to rate albums, which I think is, is probably pretty spot on. But one of the things, early critiques he had for us as he was going through our first few episodes was that when we were complaining about artists that didn't have material on this list, often we would bring up what Thomas calls singles artists, who are really good at making hit songs, not so great at putting together an exceptional album. And as I listen to this album, I think there's not really a single on here. There's not a song that I would say, oh man, this is going to get a ton of airplay. But as an album, it's just really well put together. It flows well. The themes are all there. It feels, I don't know, concept albums. I still don't exactly know when we say that, what we mean.
What that is.
But this is a really good album, even though there are no hit songs on it. I think about, Thriller has like a ton of singles and is also a great album. But there are other albums by, I don't know, maybe an artist like, I don't know who to pick on, Taylor Swift or someone who has a bunch of really great singles, but the album kind of is clunky between songs, or it's not fair to Taylor. She does some great stuff too, but you know what I mean? Like there's plenty of artists out there who write hit songs and kind of fill in the rest with filler. And sometimes I think we get lost in the weeds a little bit when we try and say an album is great because it has successful single songs on it, kind of overlooking the fact that it may not be a great album. So I don't know what your thoughts are on that rambling tangent. But as I was listening to this album in particular, I thought this is a great album, even though I don't think any of the songs are ones that I would say are exceptional or really great.
Well, I would, first of all, definitely agree with you on this particular album. It is a great album, even though, yes, there's not really any radio singles here. Maybe Love, maybe Working Class here, although you couldn't play it because there's so much cursing in it. They added songs, but I think no, you don't, but it's a great album. We have listened to some songs or some albums rather that I have really struggled with have been in the top 10 or even top 5 because a group of people have determined that they are great albums, and I struggle to figure out why. So I do agree with you and what Thomas is saying, but again, and maybe it's the age and the relevancy of us being born in 1982 and not born in 1945 or 55 to really appreciate the era in which these records were released in.
Yeah.
But maybe we've missed the fact that all the songs are congruent, that kind of adhere to each other, that maybe we don't like them, but we've missed the idea that they work together.
Yeah.
Let's use, Highway 61 Revisited. We struggle with the album, but maybe we miss that all the songs really speak to each other. I think that's it.
This might be the kindest thing we've ever said.
maybe I've cracked the code on that album.
Yeah. And just because something fits doesn't mean that it's great. Like, I think that's right. That's truth too, right? That there are lots of people who do, wonderful concept albums that flow from song to song and touch on the same themes and are just really mediocre or not done well.
Right. Sure.
So there's got to be some greatness in the way that if you're focusing on just that album construction piece, there's got to be some greatness there as well.
And that has been a great challenge for us individually and as a team or duo, if you will, to try and figure out what makes this so great. Someone thought it was great, or a group of people thought it was great. So let's try and crack that out, even if we don't necessarily like it. because that's very subjective. What everybody likes something different. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can try and figure out why somebody has deemed this is great. This is a great album. I think this is one of the ones that I can see a lot of the things that would make someone say this is a great album. And I was really like you, I was pleasantly surprised, especially because at first I really didn't think it was special. And as it went on, it was just really grew on me.
Yeah.
So do you think that this album in its entirety and even individual songs, do you think it is still relevant?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's relevant for the same reason that I want Nirvana's Nevermind to be relevant, because I think it's an artist working through difficult stuff in their life. So whether or not the sort of sound stylistically holds up well, I think there's a vulnerability here that I think is absolutely crucial at this moment in time. And people need to be consuming more of that rather than less. So it's absolutely relevant for me. Point one, what would you say?
I think that, I don't know. I think that the lyrics and the ideas are still relevant. I think some of the music is relevant. I don't think I hear these songs being played a lot. We talked that they're not radio hits. So I don't hear them on the radio, and I don't really hear them in other places. So I think the idea of it is relevant, but I don't hear them.
Hmm. Yeah. That's an interesting way to,
I don't, you know what I mean? Like, we've talked about, you know, what would happen. Like we talked about, for example, Michael Jackson's Thriller. What would happen if you put on a track for a Thriller in the club? Well, yeah. Everyone would go nuts, you know, like you could do it right now, go down, you know, in any club tonight. And, you know, but what would happen if you went into a rock club or whatever and put this on? I don't know. I don't know if people would recognize it or would like it if it was something new. But it's not really that kind of album.
Especially because it's taken some time to grow on us.
Well, yeah. And I think the idea of dealing with difficult issues should always be relevant, because we have to do that. And I commend any artist who's going to tackle those issues, because it's not pleasant. It's not popular and it's not easy. So I think that's important. And the tough thing about it is you can't do it all the time because the reasons I just mentioned. So, you know, that's the challenge there. So yes and no, irrelevant in some ways and not in others. Does it sound dated to you?
It sounds like a 70s album at times.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like what I think the cover thinks it should sound like. It's not a flower child spinning in a meadow kind of album. But yeah, I think it does sound like it's from that era. But I think, you know, we've talked before about the instruments used. It's mostly guitar, piano, drums. It sounds like something that could be recorded today, and the recording quality is good. So there are aspects of it. There are aspects that don't sound dated at all.
I would agree. I would agree with all that. So given those things and everything we've talked about, was it sound logic for Rolling Stone to put this at number 23? What do you think?
This is going to be a tough one. I'm just now thinking about our own rankings. I like this album a lot, but I don't know that it has, you know, it doesn't have the major singles. It doesn't have the massive record sales. It's influential in some ways, I guess. Music people like it, and it's good. It's something I enjoy, but 23, that feels a little high in my mind, and I don't know where I would put it. You know, we talked about in the last episode when Robert Johnson diverged from the 2003 list, this album was just a little bit lower. Is that right? No. This album got nudged down. Yeah, it had been yeah, number 22. The list that I referenced at the beginning of the episode, top 100 albums from the 60s and 70s and 80s, they listed that as number 4. So, Yeah, I don't know. Perhaps the longer we get away from it, the more that this will remain as relevant as it is. Perhaps when 2023 list comes out, it'll have fallen again. I don't know.
I think I'm with you. I struggle. I think it's a little high. I think it should be lower, given kind of sales and popularity and, you know, radio singles. I think really it's here because of the story it tells. Really the story it tells about John.
Yeah.
Because if you took all these songs and didn't change them at all, nothing, you know, except that it's not John Lennon, I think this album, you know, maybe doesn't even make the top 500 list, because it's the story of the front man of the Beatles. Yeah. It's his story of what he went through and what his next step was after the breaking up of the greatest band of all time. And I think that story is so significant and is so tied to everybody who grew up in that area, mm-hmm. or just about everybody, that this is a very, very special album for a lot of people, especially music fans. And, you know, again, remembering this song or this list is compiled by music aficionados and people who grew up with it and people whose livelihood depends on analyzing and knowing everything they can about music. So, of course, the first solo album from the front man of the Beatles, or one of them, is going to be very significant. So I think that is why it's bumped a lot higher than I think in terms of just the music and just the album. I think it would be a lot lower. We're going to talk about some albums in the next 20 and even the next 7 that are like amazing albums to listen to that I would listen to way before I would put this on. And there's a lot of reasons. One, music. Two, you know, just some of the issues in the lyrics that are challenging. But I think really it's here, whereas other albums have to do because of their influence. And certainly we've talked about the influences this has had on bands like Sloan and Ben Folds and ELO and other things. I think this is more here for the story. Yep. It's the story of John Lennon. Mic drop.
It's great. I think you're absolutely right. I think you've done a great job in summarizing its problematic place right here. I think, you know, as much as Thomas has got a point, you know, sometimes maybe we perhaps miss the greatness of an album. If I think about some of the stuff that's down the pipe here a little bit, not only are they well-constructed albums, there's also singles and also stuff that I really want to listen to. So it's like, it checks all the boxes. Well, I'm glad we did it though. This is not one that I, you know, I think bump it down because I don't like it. I really do. I'm pleasantly surprised. And
I was hesitant, you know, as it came up, I was like, well, I guess I have to listen to this album. And it's like, I really was not looking forward to it. I thought it would just kind of be a one and done. And that was not the case. So, you know, so as much as I said, I think it should be lower, I really, really liked it. I don't want anyone to get the impression that I didn't like it. It's very good. And maybe if enough people say that, then you go, well, it's got to be higher then, you know, like maybe that happened to the people who compiled this list as well.
Yeah. Last week you added this neat idea of seeing if we've got any songs on this album that had been covered that come to mind when we play through this music. This album was brand new to me and I did not recognize a single song. I'm curious if there was anything that stood out to you as a cover that you would have heard at some point in your life.
Like I mentioned at the beginning, when I heard Working Class Hero, I knew I had heard it before, but couldn't place it. Like, I knew I had heard it, but it wasn't John Lennon. So after listening to the album, I thought of that again. I thought, you know, I'm going to Google it and see if anyone's done it. And sure enough, back in, I think, 2007, Green Day did a cover of this. And so I went and listened to the Green Day cover. And as soon as I put it on, I was like, yeah, this is the one. I've heard this somewhere, because just the instrumentation of it, I was like, yes, this is the version of this that I was more familiar with. And probably when I heard it, I didn't even know it was a John Lennon song. But they do a really, I don't know if everyone's a Green Day fan, but they do a great job on it. They make it pretty, it sounds political, you know, the way they play it. And it certainly is a very political song, but when John does it, it's almost like that folk singer protest song. But, you know, Green Day makes it sound more like a kind of punk era. Even though they don't play it really in a punk, they don't play it in a punk rock way, but more of a punk era protest song, and they do a great job. So go check out that performance of Working Class Hero by Green Day.
Well, so some behind the scenes stuff for you, SoundLogic podcast fans. I often have Spotify up in the background. Occasionally we'll listen to songs in my headphones while we're talking, just to remind myself of the vibe of the album. I quickly went to look for the Working Class Hero cover by Green Day and found an Ozzy Osbourne cover of Working Class Hero.
I found that too, and I put play on it, and I wasn't going to bring it up because I didn't really enjoy it. Did you listen to it?
Yeah, it's hilarious.
Hilarious good or hilarious bad?
No, it's pretty mediocre. I had no idea that Ozzy Osbourne did a covers album of a whole bunch of other stuff.
Oh, so if you like that sort of,
yeah, if you like his sort of raspy double vocals,
I think
the date on it is 2005, so he was already pretty washed up when he released Undercover, an album full of covers from other people. Yeah, that might have been during his peak reality TV show fame. But,
John. Anyway,
another day and another time.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Well, I think that wraps up this episode, bud.
Sure does.
And we want to thank everybody for listening. We hope you join us next time. And what do we got coming up on the table here?
Yeah, I'm excited. Join us next time when we discuss album number 24, Stevie Wonder's Inner Visions. I think we'll even have a guest along for the ride, and it should be good.
It's going to be great. As always, I look forward to chatting with you again, my friend.
Can't believe we've made it this far. Here's to many more.
Okay, talk to you next time.
You bet.
If you like what you hear, subscribe on your favorite podcast app and write a review.
Send us a message at our Facebook page, on Instagram, or through our SoundLogic podcast Twitter feed. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed that classic episode of ours. Tune in next time for the next album on the new 2020 Rolling Stone list.